Welcome. This is Mark Bauerlein, Senior Editor at First Things, for another session with a distinguished guest. Today we have Philip Hamburger, who is the Maurice and Hilda Friedman Professor of Law at Columbia University. Readers may know of his work. He has a lengthy scholarly record, particularly on issues of religious liberty and the history of religious liberty in the United States. And more recently, his work is on the administrative state. Is that equivalent to the swamp? We'll see. But certainly it's a topical issue with the advent of the Trump administration and the Steve Bannon world view. Welcome, Professor Hamburger.
Thank you. Good to be here.
First question. Your book is on administrative law. Just give us a definition. What is administrative law?
Well, for one thing, it isn't law, but that's the easy part. It's been much debated what it is. Some people think of it as just specification of statutes by experts, just clarifying some details and not of much significance beyond that. In fact, I think it's a revival of what used to be known as absolute power. The Constitution lays down certain pathways for binding or obliging us. One of those is to make laws in Congress, and the other is to have judicial decisions by judges in the courts. And otherwise, the government has no constitutional authority to bind us, to impose legal obligation on us. And what administrative power does, because it is power, not law, what administrative power does is to create other ways of other pathways or avenues for binding us, primarily through executive agencies which make rules and adjudicate them. I suppose the simplest way of describing it, therefore, is sort of off-road driving. The Constitution lays down the avenues in which you can drive to exercise binding power, and the federal government, not content with that, has an off-road vehicle they call administrative power.
So we might have a piece of legislation like the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which is pretty short, what was it, 4 or 5 pages long, and then out of that, federal agencies, executive agencies, I should say, then issue guidelines, regulations, dear colleague letters. Would that be an example of administrative law that comes out of the Department of Education, for instance?
Right. We can find this across dozens and dozens of agencies, perhaps 100 or so of them. There's an underlying authorizing statute which sets up the agency and gives it power. And then on the basis of the statute, the agencies claim authority to make rules that bind us. And these have the effect of law, although they're not adopted by Congress. And the technical justifications are varied. We needn't go into it. Sometimes they're expressly authorized to make rules. And sometimes there's just an ambiguity in the statute, and the agency will say, well, we should have a power to issue authoritative interpretations of the statute or even of our own regulations. That's what's often known as guidance. And then they're off and running. They can go make all sorts of rules that control us without having to go through Congress.
Now, is there a practical argument that people would say that the law itself is so broad and we have so many different circumstances and issues that come up, say 20 years later after the law was written, that the law didn't quite anticipate. Government agencies need this kind of power and flexibility in order to address specific cases in light of the law. And so this is really just a matter of flexibility, practicality, and wisdom on the part of our appointed officials.
Right. That's been a common justification for a long time. Oddly enough, though, actually it takes a month or two to adopt a rule under the Administrative Procedure Act, and Congress can act much more quickly. So the problem isn't actually that you cannot adopt all these details in Congress. It's just that Congress politically is unlikely to do so because it's responsive to us in elections. So I would say the necessity isn't some sort of physical necessity. It's a political necessity for those who are impatient for laws that otherwise are politically or constitutionally improbable, in which case this isn't really about necessity, which incidentally is the old absolutist justification for tyranny. It may actually be about a class of Americans who are uncomfortable or dissatisfied with representative government.
And that some of these people in Congress are happy to have some of that responsibility, you know, given over to someone else because they don't have to take any heat. Is that
right? A critique of the administrative power would never be a justification of our congresspeople, many of whom are sadly not ideal. Try to be polite.
And the last thing they want to do is take a stand if they don't have to.
Very often that's the case.
Especially right. if the numbers look close.
Right. So when I was at the University of Connecticut, the provost, a football game was once asked by a student, "What's the difference between the president and the provost?" And the provost wisely answered, said, "The president says yes. The provost is the one who has to say no." And that's more or less the division of power, too, in the federal government.
You know, in one interview, you said about the book and the issue of administrative law, extra legal power is the central constitutional question of our time. Extra legal power. This is what we're talking about here. Extra legal power. How has this become the central constitutional issue?
Right. So, shall I explain what extra legal power is?
Sure.
Okay. So when I talk about extra legal power, I'm talking about the power to bind or oblige Americans that doesn't run through law, but through some other other pathway, namely administrative rules. Often it's actually authorized by law, but it does not. The binding rules are themselves not law. So we used to be a government of laws, where we're only bound by law, and now there's this extra-legal mechanism for controlling us. And this is, I think, the most serious civil liberties issue of our era. The old-style civil liberties issues of, let's say, 50 years ago or 70 years ago centered on various divisions amongst Americans, for example, racial discrimination. And that was central then. But these days, the central issue, I think, is this extra-legal power, this power that is administrative and doesn't run through law, because this threatens the civil liberties of all Americans, of all classes, of all races, of all religions. And shall I give some examples of what I mean by this?
Please.
So most basically, we used to have a right, a freedom under the Constitution, to govern ourselves through our elected representatives who reflected our diversity. That's largely gone when we get to administrative power because a relatively homogenous class controls this power and imposes its rules on us, and they're not that responsive to differing ethnic, religious, and other such views because they're going to be reelected.
I have to say, Philip, when you see someone like Lois Lerner, our IRS figure, stand at the microphone and proclaim, "I have done nothing wrong, and I'm going to take the Fifth. I'm not going to speak." How many Americans watched her do that and said, first of all, who are you? Second of all, how did you get so much power and be so unaccountable for that power that, one, you can declare yourself innocent of everything, and then, two, you can say, I'm not answering questions from anyone, and three, I'm going to walk away with my full pension.
It was a good educational moment, wasn't it?
It
is interesting. Administrative power used to be thought of as just an impediment to corporate money making, just a matter of economic regulation. But I think large numbers of Americans now realize actually this impedes individuals, this threatens individuals and the things they hold most profound, be it religion or science. And it therefore is now becoming an issue, I think, across the board. May I give you another example of how this affects civil liberties? Most of the Bill of Rights consists of procedural liberties. Right to a jury, for example, right? The right to due process. All of this is just brushed aside by administrative power. The administrative state not only makes rules, it adjudicates them and can impose fines and make other demands without any jury and without the due process of law that you expect in a court. The defensive is that it's all the process that is due. But this is surely one of the smarmiest phrases in the English language.
All the process that is due.
Translation, I call it faux process rather than due process.
Oh, my goodness. Well, but you know, when you're in that position, you are accountable to nobody except the president, really, or the secretary, the cabinet official. No one really knows what you're doing until long after the fact. You're deep into the government, which means you're hard to be seen by even reporters. Reporters can't really get to you. You start believing, I think, in your own prerogative. For instance, the way in which the Obama administration inserted gender identity into Title IX, they just put it in without any kind of deliberation. I mean, it didn't go before Congress or anything. There was absolutely no pretense of an argument that when that portion of Title IX in, 1971 had anything to do with gender identity. It was just an act by fiat. Now, Trump took it out. He just took it out. There were protests over this. But does this fit the kind of administrative law or extra legal activity?
Right. The great danger is for people of all sorts of different perspectives. And so people of traditional religious points of view have complaints about the IRS, about HHS. Folks engaged in the coal industry have complaints about the EPA, or if you have water or even mere puddles, it seems, on your land, you have reason to worry about the EPA. In every different sector of American industry and private life, there's reason to fear the intrusions of people who are not accountable in a representative system of government, in a republic, and at least not directly accountable through elections. And I think that means we're at a very important stage in the resistance to administrative power. Too often in the past, people have fought only in their narrow sphere. So the coal industry fights for coal, but not generally, let's say, to defend against problems coming out of the Department of Education, and vice versa. It's time for people to recognize that the danger is not coal, education, religion. It's much broader. It's a type of power. And so whatever regulation we have, it should come through Congress and not through agencies. And our adjudication should be in courts, not in agencies. So my hope is that people from different walks of life will come together to recognize the shared danger.
Is this problem tracked by political party? Or do Republicans seem as intoxicated with administrative power as much as Democrats are?
Although Democrats have a slight edge, I'd say generally both parties are more or less equally to blame. Certainly, the left pushed administrative power more vigorously than the right. On the other hand, the right and much of the large business community, at least in larger businesses, happily went along with it. It's hard to point blame in one direction or another. And actually, I'm not interested in assigning blame. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in recognizing the problem and doing something about it. So, for example, one of the divisions I find more interesting than political is between the people who identify as secular and favor science and people who identify as religion and want to defend religious practices and beliefs. One might say they have different interests, but in fact, both suffer tremendously under the administrative state and should be working together. So, for example, the IRS controls the speech of churches through Section 501c3. HHS controls scientific speech, both the speech in the course of human subjects research and publishing it. And the result is to leave vast numbers of Americans with shorter lives or dead. Because when you suppress medical research, you end up, well, killing people. And so there's a body count attached to this that makes Vietnam look small. So it seems to me scientists of entirely secular disposition actually have much in common with religious Americans. Both are being silenced by the administrative state and both have to fight against it.
But scientists need that federal money.
Everybody loves federal money.
Once you get the federal money, you're there. You want to be tapped in. Well, is the whole drain the swamp mandate of Trump, did he have anything like this in mind? Is this what he was talking about?
You know, I don't know President Trump. I've never met him, and I have no idea what he has in mind. I don't know whether he will take his actions further or just let things sit. I really just don't know. I hope he will go after administrative power in a methodical and prudent way, but I can't say. Mm-hmm. The drain, there's a number of phrases, as you were alluding to, that have come up under this administration: drain the swamp and the deep state. And I would distinguish those questions slightly from what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the power of these agencies to control us, mm-hmm. through regulations and adjudications. There's a separate problem of the so-called deep state, which is that unelected bureaucrats are the permanent government and rather resent the intrusions of the politically elected officials. And that is, to some degree, a problem, and it varies tremendously from agency to agency, but that's not what I'm complaining about here. And the drain the swamp metaphor could be understood a number of ways. I suspect I'd agree with some and not with others, but it's a bit amorphous for me to say in general. But each one of these phrases has slightly different connotations, and I'm focusing simply on administrative power, perhaps just because I'm a lawyer, and I think, but also because that's what directly affects each of us.
And you know, one of the libertarian points that is raised on this is that the federal government is becoming simply so complex. It has so many layers, so many different offices, so many people working for it, that it is impossible for the people and the journalists who have the obligation to keep their eyes on the halls of power. You can't keep up with it.
Yeah. I agree. It's a very important point, isn't it? So it used to be we had one mode of lawmaking in the federal government, statutes enacted by Congress. So you knew where to find them, right? And you knew how to elect or unelect the lawmakers who made them. And we knew what court system we had, the federal courts. It was all very open. It's not just the people. It's not just journalists. In fact, law professors have difficulty keeping track of all the agencies. It's funny, if you talk to older members of the professoriate who specialize in administrative power and you ask them about, let's say, a judicial practice in administrative courts, the answer will typically be, well, I worked in this or that agency and this is what we did. And you press, well, what about other agencies? And the response typically is, I don't know, I didn't work there.
Yeah.
So this is profoundly dangerous because even the specialists can't actually figure out what the typical practices are.
Right.
Right. So something needs to be done about all of this, and I think the first step is to talk about it candidly.
The Clinton shrinking government. I don't know if you looked into this at all. I think Al Gore was actually put in charge of that managerial winnowing things down, and there were some agencies that had rules. You can only hire someone if you've lost so many people. Mm-hmm. Was that seemed like a very short term. I think Clinton actually had genuine intentions to do that.
Trump is doing something similar, right, in trying to shrink the bureaucracy. I must say, though, that I actually would gladly increase the bureaucracy if we could take away the unlawful power. Uh-huh. So, for example, I've proposed, in jest, but to make a serious point, that we should be willing to double what we pay the existing members of the bureaucracy if they would simply give up the unlawful power. I don't mind that people have federal jobs, and some of them do have expertise that is worth sharing with Congress so we can enact regulations. It's just that they should not be usurping other people's power.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about the class implications of all of this?
Certainly.
Thank you. It's not just that this is unlawful. There's a class element that's very disturbing.
That these people form a political class themselves.
Well, so
with their own interests.
Yeah. So the interesting question, so the traditional 18th century vision of this would be members of the bureaucracy form a distinct class, and I think there is some of that. What actually interests me, though, is a slightly different class point, which is that most people who have any power in the administrative state are members of the knowledge class. And then by knowledge class, I don't mean people who necessarily have much knowledge or accurate knowledge. That's a different question. But people who identify not with their localities and the hierarchies of representative government there, but with their own knowledge and assume that there's an authority they acquire through their academic style knowledge mm-hmm. that perhaps needs to be translated into political power. And so when you think about the effect, what happened in America, how our republic was turned into something of a shell, and within it there grows up an administrative state, I think it's because we had increased academic education, and large numbers of people then identified with this education rather than localities. And they were somewhat dismayed by the products of equal voting rights. And in this sense, administrative power is antithetical to equal voting rights. Equal voting rights, 1870, 1920, again, 1965, means that Americans on the whole can vote, all of us, without distinctions of invidious sorts. And the knowledge class, although it supported equal suffrage, really didn't like the result. They were disgusted by the rambunctious politics of a diverse people. And so they want to withdraw legislative power out of Congress and into hands of people, well, like themselves, people who knew better.
I think November 2016 even reinforced that belief.
You know, it's been a long time coming. Woodrow Wilson, of course, was quite candid about this. He talks in really gross ways about the difficulty reformers, progressive reformers, have in persuading persons who are not of the older stocks only, people who are, as he put, Germans, Irishmen, and Negroes. So there's a racial element to this, and that persists. I don't think the overt racism still lies behind administrative power, but if you take legislative power out of the hands of an elected legislature and put it in the hands of a relatively homogenized bureaucracy, you put it one step further away from a diverse people, and so necessarily it will be less responsive to the diversity of the country. And that has profound consequences of alienation.
I bet if you did a survey of the formation, the educational and social formation of this administrative class, it would be remarkably uniform.
Yeah.
The homogeneity would be sought. And not what goes along with that is not realizing it.
Right.
Not realizing their own parochialism.
Right. If you take, you know, I think about my neighborhood. So we have all sorts of people in my neighborhood. There are a fair number of academics who float above various class and racial distinctions and are very well connected to the administrative state and know how to get things changed. And then there are Hondurans and Guatemalans and a host of others who probably have no clue. They're Americans, but first generation, and they have no clue. They know how to vote, and they think they're participating, but the real power is being exercised behind the scenes in ways that the professoriate finds much more comfortable.
Yes. Well, that could wrap it up. Give us the full title of the book so people know they can go order it.
Well, the most recent one
yes.
is The Administrative Threat, which is short and I hope to the point. May I add just also that in trying to get something done about all of this, I've started up a new civil rights organization called the New Civil Liberties Alliance, and we're going to be litigating to put an end to administrative power.
The New Civil Liberties
Alliance.
You have a website yet?
We have a small website, but we have not yet had our launch.
Okay.
So we're just getting started.
Okay. Well, if you let us know, we can announce that.
Thank you. I look forward to that.
Thank you, Professor Hamburger.
Thank you.